Welcome to The Catholic Arsonist.
We do. We have a microphone, we have headphones, and we've got a little contraption that looks like such.
Okay.
That has similar number of knobs and buttons and flashing lights that I don't know what it does.
Okay. Well, are, looks like number two, like the middle one right there.
So this is the gain.
So that's the gain. Yeah. And so feel free, like you can tinker. Like that's what I'm saying. You are familiar with such devices.
I am. We have had to deal with them on numerous occasions.
Right.
So you had to, when we had you over, you were, well, we didn't have you over. You were on the phone.
Right.
Which is, I find it much more difficult to do these types of conversations over the phone versus in person. You miss just the interaction. Mm-hmm. You know, you miss just being able to see the body language. And I'm a hand gesture, guys. You just noticed, like a clown. Traffic controller is what I should have been. But, you know, here we are.
Who also wear warm socks. True story. Okay, so that's...
Sound good?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Okay.
Yeah, well, again, well, welcome to this episode of The Catholic Arsonist.
Here we are.
Here we are. So we have a special guest today, Mr. Jeff Bush, coming all the way from Cottleville, Missouri.
Yes.
Crossing a body of water to come be with us today.
Wow.
I did. Coming east.
That's right.
It's a lot easier for east. Folks from St. Charles County, apparently, to come
east. That's
right. You know.
Turn to the east. It's a very, Christian theme. You know? Look to the east. So, we were teasing just beforehand that the first time that you and I met was a memory that, you know, I hold near and dear to myself.
Oh my gosh.
So I was invited to go down to a fundraiser for Life Team called the President's Gathering. That's an annual event where they invite people to just kind of come and learn and become part of the mission of Life Team on a national level. And so I am sitting in the waiting area of Southwest Airlines, getting ready to hop on a plane. You know, just really communing with the Lord, just, you know.
Ridiculous.
And a cup of coffee, I think. And then all of a sudden, this very nice guy walks up and says, "You're Father Martin, aren't you?" And I said, "I am," which is always for me like one of those in-betweeners because you never know. Three thoughts. Should I know this person? And then subcategory two, if I am supposed to know this person, is this a person that I want to be bumping into right now? Or is this a person that I don't want to be bumping into right now? But anyway, you just introduced yourself and you said, "Hey, like we're on the same flight, like we're going to the same place."
So there's some additional context that I think is important. Right. One, it's like 5:15 in the morning. The sun is not even up. And my wife and I were walking up to board the plane, and we didn't know you were going to be on the plane. There were some other parishioners from St. Joe's that we were sort of keeping our eyes peeled for. And then my wife kind of nudges me, and she's like, "Hey, it's Father Martin." Now, my wife had been at a retreat.
Oh, the Life Team Women's Retreat.
Yeah.
There you go.
So you had never met him before?
No, never seen him, nothing.
You probably didn't know who it was, but you thought you needed to know who it was?
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
Good.
So, yeah. Well, so here's what's going through my mind, and this is what's incredibly comical to me, I guess. But my wife goes, "Hey, that's Father Martin." And I go, here we go. And we're only about 15 feet away, and I know immediately that I must walk up to you and introduce myself. But, you know, you described, you don't know who this person is, or do I do I want to engage in conversation, or like, "Hey, I'm actually in prayer. Can you come back later when my headphones aren't on?"
That's right. You know, I came to a deserted place to be away from the crowds.
Well, and I went into sprint mode because I was like, "Hey, Father Martin," I said, "my name is Jeff Bush, and we have not met."
That's right.
But I quickly...
Which is perfect.
I quickly introduced myself and my wife and... just wanted to, it was one moment where we knew we might be able to say hello and we might be able to meet you. She was touched by, the retreat that she had been on that you had led. and had always said, hey, you've got to meet this guy. Partially because I think, you know, you and I have a similar degree of sarcasm. So my wife was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to put the two of you together and then I can have a nice vacation. So
we sat on each other. We sat on the plane next to each other.
Well, as my wife describes it, she says that's when the bromance began.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so we fly down to the retreat.
They had drink tickets. That was very nice.
They did. It's still only 6 a.m., but yeah. So we fly down, and then we have numerous other experiences involving, you know, the rental cars with broken rearview mirrors.
Oh, yeah, no. So he and I get, so I just said, like, tell me your story. And so we're just standing, you know, in the rental car.
Well, I think you said, tell me your story. And then I was like, it's going to take more than 5 minutes. And then we saw the line at Budget and knew we were going to be there for an hour.
That's right. Neither of us were elite members, so we had to wait. So
you drank on the plane first, and then you were like, hey, I should probably get to know this man. It wasn't the other way around.
It was a Whiskey Wednesday. It was okay. The prefigurement of a Whiskey Wednesday. But it was
strictly coffee.
That's right.
Oh, okay, good.
But, so then we're pulling out, and it was just, I don't know, it was just guys being guys. And so we had a fun, like we get to choose a car. So, like, we choose a car, and then we ran, and I'm like, oh, no, we should go for that one. So we go for this other car that was not the one that you wanted originally. And then as we're pulling out, you're like, hey, can you extend that side view mirror out? And I'm like, well, I would if there was one attached to the car.
Technically, it was attached, but it was dangling, I believe.
That's right. So then we had to turn right back around, have everybody get all their stuff back out of the car. And
we did, but we were off and running for the good after that.
That's right.
So many laughs, but I think, you know, our hearts were warmed by Life Teen most certainly through that trip. And just, you know, our daughter had... Is this about Life Teen? Is that what we're doing this conversation about?
It's about anything.
It's about our journey. Yeah. There you go. Right. So
the parish is familiar with Life Teen, though, to a certain extent. So they'll know what you're talking about.
Our daughter had an absolutely incredible encounter with Life Teen, you know, which is perhaps a story for another day. But she came back from her Life Teen retreat, and this is it. You know, midnight when she returns home after being gone for a week, which as parents, our child had never been, you know, too far away from us, let alone we put her on a bus with, you know, a bunch of other kids and one youth minister and said, we'll see you in a week. Good luck into Georgia. But she came back, and as she was unpacking her bag on her bedroom floor that evening, you know, my wife and I and our other daughter, younger daughter, were just ecstatic that she was going to be home. But she's unpacking her bag, and she's just rattling off 100 miles an hour all the different stories and, like, the mud games and, you know, just all sorts of stuff. And then she looks up on her knees with her arms stretched out and kind of back, and she goes, and Jesus was there. And it was the most incredible moment we had seen faith-wise come out of our daughter. Wow. And it literally, I mean, she's there on her knees with her arms extended, palms out, going, and Jesus was there with, like, profound emotion. And, like, from that point on, my wife and I were like, we're in. I don't know a lot about this Life Teen thing, but, like, we're in.
Right. By their fruits, you know them, you know?
So, yeah. So that was really cool. But, man, we'd gone through. Our kids have spoken to us a lot through their Catholic education, just as part of sort of our faith formation, and certainly through my conversion story.
So let's hop into that. So, Jeff, what is your story?
We're back in the budget line. Tell us again.
I started with, like, what do you do? And you're like, that's a really good question.
It is a really good question. All right. I have a podcast. How about that? I co-host a Christian podcast, a Catholic podcast called Blazin' Bush,
right.
Which, you know, turns out doesn't pay the bills. But
dang it, what are we doing here?
Yeah, really. But you know, rewind a couple years prior to that. So, like, we, I converted to Catholicism a couple of years ago. So I grew up a Lutheran. I grew up in a Lutheran household, loving parents. You know, my parents were together, still are together, raised our kids in just this loving home, but we were sort of a checkbox on Sunday family at a Lutheran church. And I really didn't have any sort of connection, really strong connection with faith growing up. It was something we did. I believed in God, believed in Jesus, but it was just sort of there. And when I really began, when my wife and I were raising our kids, my wife was dead set on raising our kids Catholic. It really didn't mean anything to me at all. As an adult, we were going to Catholic Mass a couple of times a month. We were certainly there, you know, on Christmas and Easter, and you know, my wife would go on Holy Days of Obligation, but I didn't understand why aren't you going to church on a Thursday morning? Like, do you have to go to work? So it really wasn't necessarily a part of my life. But there was this just really sort of yearning in my heart. To be honest with you, it was complete restlessness. I know this is a word that, you know, is sort of near and dear to all of our hearts. As we sort of, you know, live in society today, we see a lot of restlessness. But, you know, society would have defined my life a few years ago as really good. You know, my wife and I are gainfully employed. I'm working as an investment banker in finance at that particular time. My wife's got a great job. We're all generally healthy. We live on a golf course.
And picket fence, couple dogs.
It's kind of like the picket fence story. It's like you are doing everything you are supposed to be doing in building and growing and leading a good life. But I was so unfulfilled. My heart was restless. I call it festering restlessness because it was kind of like this just really growing, unfulfilled feeling in my heart and in my life, and it was getting bad. Nothing was making me happy. There wasn't anything that was going on that fulfilled me, that gave me real happiness. I have a beautiful, loving wife who's amazingly patient and put up with me this entire time, but I got to the point where I was angry. I had an incredibly short fuse. Like, if the dog accidentally turned the wrong direction on the walk, it was the end of the day. And it was going to be the end of the day for everybody that I ran into for that day. And I couldn't explain it. It was really a horrible way to live life. Again, we're doing everything on paper correctly, but I'm torn apart internally. And I have no idea where to turn.
Did you notice, sorry to interrupt, did you notice that though? Because I feel like so often we're blind sort of onto our own vices or our own inclinations, you know, like, or did it take your wife being like, Jeff, you gotta pull it together, figure out what's going on. Like, what was the...
100% blind.
Okay, wow.
To the point where my wife would avoid me. You know, they do, my wife and my kids, they have this little light switch motion they do with their finger. And they would do it and they say, Dad is shutting down.
Wow.
And they would turn the direction. They would turn another direction. They would do activities that were away from me. Yeah, really. That really sounds bad. I sound like a horrible person. But wait, it gets better. You know, and I was really searching for, like, what is the point of all of this? Like, what is, like, I want to say, what is the purpose of this life? Like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. Yet this sucks. I mean, it really does. It's tearing apart my family. And my wife and I, and this is kind of where, and I couldn't find that answer. Like, I was looking, I Google it, like, what is the point of this? And then, you know, and I couldn't find the answer anywhere. And one evening, my wife and I were watching the Summer Olympics. This is in 2016. And you guys remember Michael Phelps, the swimmer, you know, like the most decorated Olympian of all times. Right. We're watching him swim one evening, and I just said to my wife, I was like, I wonder what his net worth is. Because that's the type of stuff that like went through my head at that point. I'm like, I don't know, I want to measure his success. Like, how much money does that guy make? Mm. So I grabbed the iPad and Googled Michael Phelps' net worth, which popped like $50 million at the time. And we were like, man, that's incredible. You know, he's an amateur athlete, but he's making $50 million in sponsorships and all these things. And I'm like, man, that's so cool. This guy's really got it going on. That's success right there. Like, I need more. I need something like that. So I continued scrolling on the iPad because I was like, I want to learn more about this guy. So I get down like a couple of articles later and I bump into this YouTube short documentary that ESPN had done on Michael Phelps. And I was like, I want to watch this because I want to know, like, what's this guy's secret to success? Well, this video is the complete opposite of what I expected it to be. Like, Michael Phelps' life had been in this incredibly dark hole. He had had two DUIs. He had locked himself in his apartment and had contemplated suicide. He had this incredibly broken relationship with his father that led back to his youth. And like this perception I had of this man that had everything going for him was just not real. Hmm. And then a little further in the documentary, up pops Ray Lewis, who is the former linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens. He was just a great football player who has had his own challenges that he has had to deal with. But he introduces Michael Phelps to this book called A Purpose-Driven Life by Pastor Rick Warren. You guys have probably heard of this book before. And it had been sort of instrumental in opening his eyes to a greater purpose in life. And at the time, you've got, you know, Michael Phelps and Ray Lewis, these two kind of real masculine men. And I was like, I got to read that book. I got to read that book. So I don't read it. I download the audio copy because that's just that's just how I roll.
I'm going to read it tonight. I'm going to listen to it tonight.
Yeah. So for the next 5 months, I listened to this book back and forth on my commute to work from St. Charles County into Clayton and back. And I don't tell anybody about this. I don't dare tell my wife that, hey, I think something is going on here and I'm questioning myself. And there's a lot about the book that I don't understand at all. But it's just this sort of seed that's been planted. So I listen to the book back and forth and I do that for months. And then a strange thing happens. I start going to weekly mass at St. Joe's when our kids have their school mass. So this is like an out of the blue. One of my daughters was doing a reading 1 week, so my wife and I went and we were taking pictures and doing all that stuff in the back. And the next week, the kids were like, oh, Dad, it's a school mass day. And like I dropped them off and I didn't go to the office. I turned around and pulled into the church parking lot. I'm Lutheran. And I sit in the back pew and I'm like, please don't let there be anybody here that knows me. Like, don't let them see me. It's like a Tuesday morning or something. And I'm sitting in the back and the kids start to sing. And I am a fountain of emotion. Like, I am absolutely bawling my eyes out. I don't even know why I'm there. And now I'm crying. So I went back the next week when they had the school mass, same thing happened. And I did that for months while I was listening to the book. And then it got to be a handful of months later. And my wife and my kids were kind of like, Dad, what's going on? Like, you seem a little bit different than before. And I couldn't explain anything. You know, at this point, they figured out that I'm going to the school mass and now I'm dropping them off. And they're like, Dad, you going to mass? And yeah, sure. Just don't look at me. I'm crying. So this continues for months and through the summer. And fast forward to the next October. So this is now Michael Phelps in the Olympics is August of 2016. Fast forward to the fall of 2017. And some men from our parish are going to host a fatherhood retreat called Ignite. And we're going to mass now pretty much every Sunday, but I got to tell you, I have yet to hear one word in Mass. I don't know what's going on. There's a lot going on in my head. Sunday mornings were typically a pretty clouded morning for me. I played a lot of golf with the guys on Saturdays and went to barbecues on Saturday nights. And Sunday morning, I was checked out when I was there. So really hadn't heard a word whatsoever until after Mass one day. One of these gentlemen got up and spoke and said, "Hey, you know, we're doing this fatherhood retreat, and there's going to be beers and cigars." And all of a sudden, I was like, "That's odd," but I heard that. Like, the first two words I've heard. It caught my attention. It didn't pull me into the retreat. It caught my attention. Mm-hmm. And I went home, and for the next couple of weeks, this retreat sort of stuck in the back of my head. And, you know, fast forward discussion later on, like, my wife had been praying, like, "Oh, God, please send my husband to this retreat." But, like, I am not a retreat guy. I've never been to a retreat. I'm not going to a retreat. I'm totally skeptical. Like, that's not, I'm not that guy. And plus, it was the same weekend as my 40th birthday. Like, I should have been on a golf trip, yeah, or going to Vegas with the guys. But instead, I ended up bunked up with a bunch of dudes in Carlinville, Illinois. And so it begins. So I ended up going to the retreat. I still, to this day, like, I know the Lord was the only reason, like, he was pulling me in. I had no idea at the time what I was doing. Still Lutheran. These are all Catholic guys. Sort of this real revelation came to me on Saturday afternoon of the retreat. So one of the deacons from St. Joe's who had come had just sort of finished his witness. In his witness, I had heard that he's from Iowa. I'm from Iowa. He used to be a competitive golfer. I'm a competitive golfer. There was a lot of, he's a lawyer. I work in finance. Like, there's, it's just like, wow. You know, that's normal. That sounded normal to me. Like, I heard a normal guy who just happens to be a deacon tell me this stuff. And something resonated at the time with his witness. And as his witness concluded, he was about ready to send all of the guys that wanted to go to reconciliation. And there was like two of us there that weren't Catholic. and he said, "For those of you that aren't Catholic, there's some rosaries in the back of the room and a pamphlet about the rosary." And he said, "Why don't you grab a rosary, grab a pamphlet, go find a quiet place somewhere on campus and learn about the rosary." I was like, "Oh yeah, this guy's from Iowa. He's a golfer." Like, yeah, I'm going to take his advice on this. So I did that. And I went out on this, they had this football field on the campus, and it's paint the picture here. It's a beautiful day, like not a cloud in the sky, warm breeze. And across from this football field, it's a cornfield. We're literally in nowhere. So I grabbed a rosary and I grabbed one of these pamphlets, and I go out and sit on the field, facing the cornfield. And like I hear, "Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee." And it's repeating over and over and over in my head. I've never prayed the rosary in my life. I know it's this beaded thing that, you know, all of the Catholics sort of like have hanging around. And I hear this over and over and over in my head. And it's in my daughter's voice, my second grade daughter's voice. And if you thought I was emotional at those masses, it's that point where I was overwhelmed with emotion. Like, my chin is quivering, like I'm shaking with emotion. And then the voice, the prayer ceases. And I hear another woman's voice, and she says, "Welcome home." And like, I get chills right there, wow, just even saying that. And then a friend of mine comes and taps me on the shoulder, and we go walk around campus for a couple hours. And I don't tell him about this, but we get back and I seek out Deacon. And Deacon, I just sort of startle him with my curiosity. I'm like, Deacon, I had this experience out on the football field where I heard my daughter's voice saying the Hail Mary, and then I heard another woman say, welcome home. And I'm like, I'm so emotional. And he goes, you realize the Blessed Mother oftentimes speaks to us in a childlike voice. And then the water fountain of emotion begins again. And, you know, it's kind of a haze from that point. But I get home from the retreat the next day. And I walk into the kitchen and my wife is there. And we don't even say a word. And we just embrace. And we're both just crying with emotion. And then I feel my kids like kind of grab our legs and kind of join in the hug. And we're all crying with emotion. And then I go, Dad's going to become a Catholic. And it was just really like I had been touched by, I had really been touched by the rosary and touched by the Blessed Mother in this experience. And how I had gotten from this festering restlessness to just this point of like, I need to let go of everything from that point on. Like the emotion that I had been having at the masses, and frankly, the emotion I'd been having in my car listening to the Purpose Driven Life. You always see some people every now and again driving, and they're crying, and you're like, "What's your problem?" You know,
like listening to the Purpose Driven Life.
But you know, the Lord, I think, connects with people, and really manifests, you know, this just relationship in these just incredibly unique ways that as a human you really can't describe. You can just, only the Lord can come and find you and open your heart. There could have been, you know, Father, you say some wonderful things in homilies or in a talk or, you know, on the podcast, and you're like, man, people should really hear that. But sometimes it's impossible for them to hear. Like their eyes are closed and their ears are closed, and they're not doing it intentionally. They don't know it. And it literally takes the Lord's intercession or the Blessed Mother's intercession to really shake some of these layers off the onion. And for me, from there, it was, you know, we entered RCIA the next week. And my wife was my sponsor. My wife had grown up a Catholic, but, you know, we were sort of, we learned about the faith and sort of grew in the faith together, which if anybody ever asks me, you know, who should be your sponsor going through RCIA, if your spouse has an opportunity to be that sponsor, like, in my opinion, it's a wonderful experience for them to go together because, you know, I think their hearts can be opened and in a beautiful, beautiful way. So that's the story. So now I'm all head over heels, fully Catholicized. I host a Catholic Christian podcast. Yeah, so like it's a very different man than I was before.
Oh my gosh. So thanks so much. That's such a great, beautiful witness.
Yeah.
Two things that kind of stood out to me is even this morning, in the gospel, I talked about like this twofold call, right? And so it says, Jesus says, repent for the kingdom of God is at hand. But then it's, come and I'll make you fishers of men.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is so beautiful about your story is that there is a time and a place where the Lord calls us to conversion, but it's usually the voice of the Lord isn't stop doing that. Like, stop doing that. Like, stop, you know, like there can be a sting of conscience, of course, but more often it's like, I'm going to use the restlessness inside of you to lure you in. Mm. And then it's this welcome home, you know, and like this is what you've been searching for. And I think that that takes time, and the Lord's so kind and patient with us. But like you were just saying, you know, I could stand up and proclaim the catechism and the Ten Commandments and all these types of things. And once in a while that resounds with like truth inside of somebody of, man, I really do need to change my life, you know. But more often than not, I think the most common form of discernment and conversion really comes from the desire of the heart and the Lord's desire to say, not only like turn away from what you think should make you happy to what will make you happy, but then, and now, I don't want you just to be a fisherman. I want you to be a fisher of men.
Yeah.
And so that goes from turn away from the worldly to the divine to, and now let me make you do things that you couldn't have done before.
Yes.
You know?
Well, and there's really another part to this story that I had to really come to as well, because after converting, so this retreat happens in October. We go through RCIA. You know, I become a Catholic in April of 2018. And I immediately, you know, like after Easter Vigil Mass, you know, we're getting out of St. Joe's at like 11 o'clock. And Easter Sunday, the next day, we were back at Mass at 7 a.m. because it was just, none of us could sleep. Mm. It was this just sort of extreme joy. Yeah. But it was not all that rosy from there on. Like, I was going to daily, I immediately started going to daily Mass. I was like, man, this Eucharist is incredible. Like, I want to live this just really sort of devout life going forward, which was really kind of easy to do right after confirmation because you're just so excited and it's new and it's fresh in a way. Well, I had been going to daily Mass until the school year ended, so a couple months later, and then I no longer had to take my kids to school at 8 a.m., so I was home with them, and I was like, you know what, I'll just take a week off and be home with them. Next thing you know, it's like September, and I hadn't been back, but there was this moment, like right at the end of May and the beginning of June, which was really this like really rock bottom moment for me, which when we really sort of bake it into the story, I still needed to have something happen before I was really ready to embrace changing my life. Because my wife and my kids had gone to Memphis for a soccer tournament for my oldest daughter, and I stayed home. We had two young labs, so I was like, oh, I'll stay home with them. And I had been so dedicated to the faith and like growing in my faith, I was like, wow, this is a real opportunity for me to be home and just kind of sort of pray and, you know, take a load off in essence. Well, the devil literally swept in and pulled me out of my house, and I ended up playing golf for the next 48 hours, almost literally, with my friends who hadn't seen me for 9 months because I was just buried in, you know, the catechism and just this newfound love of Jesus and conversations with my wife and other folks in RCIA and things like that. They had come in and swept me, and I completely fell off the wagon, per se. And my wife and kids were coming home that evening, and we had established this Sunday night family night where from 4:30 p.m. on, there were no phones, there was no TV. We would all cook dinner together. It was just a really cool thing. But there was also a barbecue at one of my friends' houses within the golf course community. And again, I hadn't seen my kids and my wife for 48 hours because they were at this soccer event. And my wife was like, hey, we're home. And I wasn't all that coherent, perhaps, within the conversation. And I said, hey, I'll be home in a little while. And she's like, you know, it's family night. Let's just put it this way. My wife really thought we had lost our faith equity at that point in time because I decided to stay with my guy friends. I completely shut off my family, which is the old way that I had been living. And I came home, and my wife was, I mean, completely distraught, emotional, she really felt like, hey, all this stuff we had done, you just let go. Like, are you ever really going to change? Hmm. And, you know, one thing led to another. I fell asleep. When I woke up at about 3 a.m. and I was actually sick. I was shivering. I had a cold sweat. Like I couldn't understand what was going on. And I begged God. You know, I just said, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I'm done with this. And I was like, give me an answer. And I'm sick, feel like physically sick. And there's nothing. He's not saying a word. And then I go and sit at my kitchen counter, and I have my head down on my hands, or, you know, kind of like my head in my hands. And he said, read the Bible. I was like, cool, like, I'll do that tomorrow. But what about right now? And he's literally like, read the Bible. So I went, grabbed my Bible, and like, I know Genesis is really hard to start with, so I went to Matthew. So I literally flipped it open, and I started reading it. Like, I've never read the Bible. You know, there's certainly some scripture in RCIA, and but I've never read the book. And I start reading Matthew, like word after word after word. And it's words. I'm reading a book at that point in time. Like, it's not speaking to me. I didn't know what I wasn't expecting anything. I didn't know what to expect. And then I get to chapter 7, you know, and it hits me, the wide gate and the narrow gate. And I'm stopped in my tracks because I'm like, I'm kind of a wide gate guy. Like, that makes sense. Like, I'm a wide gate guy. And then I go just a little bit further, you know, and scripture talks about, you know, when you get to heaven, like, are you going to be allowed through the gates of heaven? You know, and it's just right there in Matthew chapter 7. And I stopped reading and I'm like, I might not be going to heaven. Hmm. Like, I'm living a life that is much more geared towards walking through the wide gate, and like, I'm an A+ student at having a good chance of going to hell. And it scared me like no other. And it was really at that point I knew my old life had to end. Like, that person I was needed to be gone. And it's really from that point on, like, this real rock bottom moment that I knew I had to have the Lord and I had to live for his purpose and I had to love in every situation in my life and I needed to serve. Like, I need to serve with just intense passion to show the Lord that, hey, like, I don't want to go to hell. I don't. Like, I really, really desperately, desperately want to go to heaven. And I am going to show you that I want to go to heaven. And guys, it's like from that moment on, I started removing the toxicity in my life. It meant I had to end some relationships. It meant that I wasn't going to go play golf with the guys, which they still look at me cross-eyed. Like, dude, what is going on with you? You know, I ended up leaving the field of investment banking. I got fed up with the greed and just the leadership driven by fear. It was too rampant for what I was, the manner that supported how I was trying to live my life for Christ. It's not to say, you know, some really great people and some amazing relationships and some wonderful, wonderful opportunities that I received from that industry and some knowledge. But it wasn't for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And goodness, am I hosting this podcast or, you know, I'm doing all the talking. But it was at that point that I knew I had to change. I knew I had to change. And I actually had to change. And I think really, I'm sitting here wide-eyed thinking about that. Because a lot of the people I know now, they're like, that old you really sounded like he kind of sucked. And he did. And he did. And a lot of the people I meet and know now, they're like, man, we love you. Like, we love that guy. And they're like, we want to know and love and be friends with that guy and grow with that guy. And they're like, they start looking to me. They're like, what happened? Like, tell me the story. And it's just been, it's been really motivating to me and inspiring me to me, to then begin to see some of my friends be like, hey, can I, you know, I want some of that secret sauce.
Right.
And I'm like, I want to share it. I'm happy to share it. Like, there's tons of it. Like, it's infinite.
Can you speak a little bit about, yeah, what was your wife's reaction? So when all of a sudden you say, I think I need to quit my job. Like, what, I mean, like, so how, because obviously she is this grace, or God's grace is working through her the whole time, like, this constant love, loving the old you into the new you, that even the grace of, like, heartbreak of, think about, like, God the Father, like, we break his heart when we turn away from him, you know, and so that love of, you know, I'm sad because you've turned away from what was good and gone back, you know. And so being that instrument of grace that then spurred God to speak to you again. But then, you know, just like the practicality side of it, of saying like, oh yeah, like, you know, it's really great. Like, yeah, you should stop hanging out with those guys. Those guys are jerks. They make you into a drunk lush that I don't want to spend Sunday nights with. And, you know, and yeah, you should spend more
time. Those are your words, not mine.
And you should spend more time with your kids. And that's good. Bro. And then, but as this conversion goes on, then all of a sudden you say, and not only that, but yeah, like the way that I help provide for our family, like, that's part of the toxicity. And
hugely part of the toxicity.
I need to get rid of it.
Huge.
And so, like, what was that conversation? Because, again, I think that even from, like, a spouse's point of view, it's kind of like, well, no, like,
I didn't mean that much.
Yeah, can't you?
Right.
There's some things that I want you to get rid of. There's some things I want you to be able to tolerate well and then still maintain this good to you, too. So what was that like?
Yeah, so praise be to God for discernment. I didn't really understand discernment at the before. I made decisions because I was in control. And deciding to leave my occupation that was providing a sound benefit to us did not come easily and did not come immediately. So I had sort of began to organize my life into really six categories driven by faith, health, family, work, charity, and fellowship. So I began to make decisions. Everything in my life needed to be intended for God's purpose and fit into one of those categories. So, like, playing golf drunk with the guys, like, oh, the fellowship. Nah, not really. It didn't fit there anymore, so I got rid of it. So incorporating more prayer, losing a couple pounds, spending more time with my family and kids, like, these were things that were super healthy and enriching and energizing. And I felt like I had sort of reorganized every category except for work. And my wife saw the change that I was having on me. So I also like to think about it this way. Like, if you change, and if you're living for God's purpose, like, people around you are going to start to, it sort of is a package deal. Like, my wife was also growing in her faith. So she and I strengthened ourselves and our relationship. My kids were also coming along for the ride and loving it. Because they're like, Dad, you know the rosary? Like, let's pray the rosary together. Which was super cool. And my wife knew. So to answer your question, it really wasn't much of a conversation. Hmm. It was very obvious. So, and she was probably stronger, is still to this day stronger in that decision than I will ever be, because her trust at that point in time in the Lord was, he will provide. Hmm. He will provide. And now I'm not saying, hey, everybody who, you know, falls in love with Jesus all of a sudden is on some faith high, like go quit your job, and because that's not the answer. Like, I don't want that to be oversimplified in any way, shape, or form. Like, we were in a position to safely, I don't want to say comfortably, but it was an okay decision to make at that moment. It wasn't ill thought. Mm-hmm. It wasn't unplanned. Mm-hmm. We're pretty conservative as it is, so, you know, it made sense. But the reality is, until I could shed that burden, I really wasn't going to be able to allow myself to be led in the true manner that I believe the Lord has in store for myself. And it's crazy because I'm one of those guys where, like, I think I kind of like know everything, you know, I know what's going on. I got this under control. And it's the people that are around you that are like, dude, we've known that about you forever. Like, you needed to get rid of that, or you needed to make that change. Hmm. And she's been pretty steadfast just in, like, the Lord's got something else planned for you. And until you allow yourself to shed these burdens, it's until then that you're actually going to be able to receive just this full grace that he has and accept the plan that he has put forth in front of you. Like, you almost got to clean up your own mess in a way before you're like allowed to really fully move forward. Mm. And she always felt that. So it's interesting. She had sent me a text just right before I left. And it was just a little kind of a private note about courage. Mm-hmm. You know, and I told my wife this last night. In fact, we were just having a conversation. And, you know, I said, you are the most courageous person I've ever met. Because for one, she stuck with what wasn't comfortable for a long time. And love is a very, very powerful thing that I think that sometimes if you can have the courage just to fight through some challenges, and if you can turn your hearts and your minds toward God, he does some pretty special things. But you kind of got to have courage. Yeah. You got to be willing to say, hey, I'm going to trudge through this mess because I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense, but she's a strong woman.
Now, I always talk about, I love etymology, and then the courage comes from heart, right? And so when we're discouraged, it means that we've had our heart taken out of us. And then the Lord is the great encourager, like he puts our heart back into place. Mm-hmm. And what I hear from you is that, like, your wife is a great encourager of you, like, walk in with your heart in place. And do what you know you need to do, you know.
She is. And when you can package together the Spirit of the Lord with love and with courage, and then you can really trust. Mm-hmm. You know, trust is kind of like the next phase, and really surrender. Mm-hmm. Like, we were, by leaving my job, by leaving the comforts that was providing financially, by taking that away, we were really surrendering. She had probably more trust and more courage than I did. I'm admitting this to you for the first time ever on this podcast. I'm teasing. We would never go back. We would never turn back. It's just God's goodness, you know, infinite has been a word that has just been going around the last few Sundays. Mm. And His goodness is infinite.
So then you're in an airport and you meet Father Martin on a plane down to...
Speaking of infinite goodness.
No. Oh, gosh. Oh, shucks. That's all the time we have, folks. No, but if you don't mind talking, there's a cool moment that was not part of the retreat, but... And I was obviously just getting to know you for the first 36 hours or 48 hours or whatever it was. But we kind of bumped into your former self, hopping into a car. And you were completely blown away, like, at that moment that you were here, you know, for a Catholic youth conference. And there was a friend from the past that you just kind of bumped into who was still in the old mode. Anyone just talk about that, like, real quick? I mean,
No, it's really, it's a part of this journey that I'm not sure I even fully can comprehend still. So we're leaving the hotel. I feel like I need to provide some context.
Sure,
like,
it's
not the Super 8. This conference is an incredible event. And it happened to be hosted at the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, Florida.
Casual.
It is very casual.
That's right.
Now, I don't know how to describe that, but it needs to be said in the context of this moment. Because I ran into my former college roommate, who I hadn't seen in 20 years, who is the man... Who's the type of guy that would fly to places like Naples, Florida, as we're walking out of this hotel. He would fly to a place like Naples, Florida, and stay at a Ritz-Carlton and play golf and really disconnect from society, but be there to have fun and to have a good time and probably to have a couple too many beverages and perhaps throw around a few bucks gambling and some things like that. But like... You know, he's a very affluent individual, and he was one of my best friends. It was the life that we were living. We played golf, we gambled, we goofed around way too much, like all that stuff, but it was just complete carefree, selfish life, and it was fun. Like, it was incredibly fun, but we're walking out of the hotel. I haven't seen him in 20 years. He sees me. I didn't even see him at first. And I turn around and I'm literally 1 foot away from him, face to face. And it's like, holy cow. And honestly, like, my heart skipped a beat because Father Martin's standing right next to me.
Okay. And the it's great like judgment.
It's like this old self. And now all of a sudden I'm standing here with a Catholic priest. Like, what is happening?
You're like, oh, him. I don't know him. Who's that?
But we got in the car. You and I, and we're driving to the airport, and I'm not really even sure. Like, I was so confused.
You're like, did that just happen? Like,
like, Lord, what are you doing here? Like, why is that happening? And I love this guy. Like, he's a good, he's, you know, I'm going to say this. I stopped myself and I'm going to say this. Like, he's a good person.
Right.
He's a good person. But he loves to do what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the realization of that moment is I did see a version of my former self. I saw a guy that said, hey, I'm going to go run around and I'm going to make sure that I have a good time. Because you know what? I need that. I need to disconnect. What about me? That's something I used to say to myself all the time. What about me? What about my dreams? What about my goals? Like, I have huge regret I didn't try and become a professional golfer. But I would never trade what God has planned for me going forward for that, ever. Hmm. Because what he has planned for me, for my wife, for my kids, and whether that's for a couple more blinks of the eye or for many more decades to come, I want that. Hmm. I want that. So I'm glad you're there to experience that.
Well, again, I just think it's, yeah. What brings you here? Well, I'm standing here with a Catholic priest at a Catholic youth conference. We just got done with adoration. Now we're kind of, you know, like, well, what brings you here? you know, the private jet, you know, like in everything that he does.
Yeah. Hmm. It was just kind of a complete intersection of two worlds, right, per se. Hmm.
Well, Jeff, really, thanks for sharing. I think it's just your courage gives other people courage. Yeah. And like when we see people say yes to the Lord, and then we realize that, oh, they are not necessarily in the worldly sense, but in some ways, sometimes, but they are better because the Lord is part of their life, because they've made the Lord of their life, right? Instead of, oh man, like they said yes to Jesus and then, boy, it was just downhill after that. You know, like that's the misconception of, I say yes to the Lord, and what that means is, oh, all these restrictions and limitations, instead of seeing that, no, like it's an invitation to a deeper relationship. And when I say yes to something that is that good, then these other things just don't have a place anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's when I get married, that there's things that don't have a place anymore, like in my heart. And it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. You know, that's a, and so to see somebody that goes through this process where the Lord is slowly reeling you in, and that it's not perfect and it's not a one and done, but it's a continual process of conversion and saying yes on a daily basis. But then to have like this beautiful witness of you that says, and I wouldn't give it up. And then there's no, like, there's no going back to Egypt, you know, that like once we're on this journey through the desert, heading towards the promised land, like eyes on the prize, folks, like let's keep marching forward. So just really beautiful.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday, and just about what it means to be a disciple and be a disciple that's trying to make disciples. And he told me, just so bluntly, it was so good. He said, the purpose of someone in discipleship with another person is to drive them to conflict, which doesn't sound fluffy at all. But like your story is such a clear example of being in discipleship with Jesus. Like Jesus drove you to conflict within yourself, because he doesn't desire lukewarmness from any of us. Like we're either all in or all out. And that gives me hope. Like just hearing this story of like, you're all in for Jesus and you're not destitute and you're not unhappy. And, I think that's a good witness for all of us, especially men who might be listening to this too.
I really think that, I've said it before in staff meetings and everything else, but now with this year, St. Joseph too. Mm-hmm. I think that this is the year for Catholic men in a very beautiful way. And that's not a dig against the family or like the women of the church and everything, but there's
we will benefit from that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There's a desire, I think, that's being revealed through the church. That's a desire of God the Father to have more of his sons come home and be the men that they're called to be. And yeah, then all of a sudden families are stronger and businesses are better and souls are pointed in the right direction now, you know. And so, yeah, I just want to thank you. And I think that you're part of that story. I think God's going to use even just you sharing your story with us here as part of that spark that's going to help the men of this parish just kind of realize that convert, like being a disciple of Jesus is not a feminine or weak thing. And I don't mean that, like, again, that's not a misogynistic statement, but I think one of the things that has happened over time is the feminization of faith. Right. You know, I gave a talk on St. Joseph and I, you know, put up a holy card image, I think it was of St. Jude. And I go, this is what's wrong with the church today. I said, like, take a look at this holy card. I said, do I even want to hang out with this guy?
He had like blush on his face.
Yeah, it's like blush, like he's wearing lipstick, you know, like some sort of like, you know, he's in some sort of watercolored like pasture with like, and I'm like, I don't want to hang out with this guy. Like, you know, that's the type of guy we used to make fun of, you know, like this is, I want to hang out with the real man, you know, like, and a guy that says, no, like being a disciple is courageous. Like the first guys that knew that saying yes would mean their lives. You know, like those are the types of guys that like I want to hang out with, not the guys that say, oh, well, it's a nice box that I check and I kind of can tell people that I have a moral compass of some sort to be a good person, you know, so I'm not a bad person. It's kind of like the Lord doesn't want you to just be a good person. Like, he wants you to be a man. Like, he wants you to be a saint. Like, Fulton Sheen says, Jesus didn't die to make you a good person. He died to make you a new one. And, you know, I think to really kind of embrace that, like, if I want to be a new man, that's going to take a lot of courage, and it's going to take a lot of support, sacrifice, virtue, you name it, and that the Lord is trying to, I think, draw that out of the church in this coming year, you know, so.
And it takes some time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really not, you might have an epiphany, but the conversion is not an epiphany. And I think there's conversion to be had in so many, many people, especially men, to your point, within the Catholic Church today. There's a lot of guys I know, and I've had these conversations. Guys will call me and be like, hey, can we have a cup of coffee? Or can I talk to you on the phone? And they're like, man, you seem really joyful. And like, you and your wife and your kids, like, you're always smiling. Like, what's that all about? I'm like, well, because I'm not making them frown anymore. But it does take some time. And it takes some patience. It does take some courage. Mm. It takes a lot of work. And you're going to trip, and you're going to stumble, and you're going to fall. And like, thank God for reconciliation. Like, read Tuesday and Saturday for us. Like, I saw you Tuesday, and I'm going to see you Saturday again, probably. No, but it's really, you're receiving some of the sacraments and just having the courage to admit your faults and really to repent. Like, these are such basics that, you know, that the church has been really teaching and supporting for so many, 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 many hundreds of years are still applicable today. And I think when God allows your eyes to begin to be opened towards his goodness and love, and you can begin to embrace the sacraments and all that the church has to offer, it really comes together in this storm where whether you're trying or not, the Lord's just going to continue to reel you in. And he's really going to help your... I say this, my kids love this. My kids love the Grinch. You guys ever seen the original Grinch cartoon where his heart grows three sizes? They're like, Dad, that's you. But like, the Lord does that. Mm-hmm. The more you just can surrender, and you don't have to admit it to everybody you work with right on day one, but the more you can just allow yourself to be open, try and listen on Sunday morning. Like, I guarantee you will hear something that will stir your heart. Mm. And he'll, if you just give him an inch, he'll literally take care of the rest.
Jeff Bush, ladies and gentlemen.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, it's great having you. I was one of the guys that did call Jeff, and I was just like, hey, I want you to come be on my podcast. So,
and Father Martin was on Jeff's podcast earlier in the year. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, he was.
2020. It was a very serious discussion.
It was a fun discussion because it was kind of the flip side of this. Because
it was tell the story. Huh?
Yeah, so our podcast is just about how God reveals himself in ordinary lives. Hmm. You know, and it's really just sharing stories about, you know, how the Lord touched your heart. And, you know, it's just kind of what we just did
right
here. But it's your story.
Right. So it's Blaze in Bush.
Yeah. BlazeInBush.com. Check it out.
Awesome.
Good. Are we closing out? You want to do sparks? What would you like?
Sure. We can do sparks.
Okay. Jeff, a spark is just something that's sparking you this week, which it sounds like you have a lot. A lot of things inspiring you, something. It could be a book. It could be something, an upcoming event. Just something to give people to know Jesus still works in people's lives.
I'm sparked by courage.
Okay.
I'm sparked by today's gospel, which came from Mark about fishers and men, which is just kind of what we're talking about
right
here. And I'm more sparked than anything that my kids are no longer doing distance learning and they're back in person today.
Beautiful. Those are good sparks. What about you?
Let's see. What is a spark? It sounds kind of bad, but, you know, we began Ordinary Time again. And I was, it sounds kind of silly. Is it like, I like ordinary time? I like ordinary time. Ordinary time is really when we just kind of hear Jesus preach the gospel and just kind of lead us. And this, again, like this is what the day in, day out, even the prayer for the first week of ordinary time, it's really beautiful because it says, help us to see what we need to do and give us the strength to do it. I think that's just like a great, like that's how the church begins the calendar year, right? Or begins the ordinary time. Like, help us to see what we need to do and then give us the strength to do it. And so, yeah, I think that as we kind of transition, and we only have, goodness, I think February 14th is a Sunday, 15th, 16th, 17th is Ash Wednesday. So we really get to like cruise along in ordinary time only for about 4.5 weeks. And then we hop into Lent. So it was a beautiful Christmas season. We get a nice little month of ordinary time. And then we'll start our preparing for Lent. So here we go.
Here we go. I think mine, similar to what you just said, this next week's gospel on Sunday is my favorite line in scripture, which is when Jesus encounters the disciples of John the Baptist for the first time and he asks them, what are you looking for? And that just kept coming up in your story, Jeff. It's come up in my story. Yeah, the desires of the heart. So I think that's something we can all take to prayer. And I know I will this week too. So, yeah.
Well, praise God. All right. Well, again, Jeff, thanks so much for hopping on. I don't think it's going to be the last time. I have a suspicion that you might be...
We're going to be
friends. The demand is going to be so high that we want more Jeff Bush. Jeff Bush
for mayor. We'll make stickers or something. Yeah.
That's a different story, by the way.
I still have that koozie. That's another... I have that beer koozie in my room, actually. Jeff Bush for mayor. Right.
It's part of 2017 I skipped.
There you go. All right, everybody. Well, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
God bless.